Welcome to the Mastery of Deep Trance States here on Align Radio with Harry Nichols and Kathy Welter Nichols. On this week's show, we present another in our Interviews with Extraordinary People series. And this week, we have the greatest of pleasures to introduce to you Aaron Stevens. Now, Mr. Aaron Stevens has been at the leading edge of the sustainability movement for most of his life and is co-founder and CEO of Nature's Path, North America's largest organic breakfast foods company. They have facilities in British Columbia, Ontario, Washington, and Wisconsin, with sales to over 40 countries. Nature's Path is proudly independent and family-run. Aaron has a background in fine arts and is married to Ratana Stevens. They were married in 1969. Ratana is Nature's Path's co-owner founder. They have four children, two of whom are involved in the family business, and are grandparents of four. Aaron Stevens is an author of three books: Moth and the Flame, Adventures with Spiritual Adepts of Our Times; Journey to the Luminous, Encounters with Mystic Adepts of Our Century; and recently, The Compassionate Diet, How What You Can Eat Can Change Your Life and Save the Planet. Enjoy this interview with an extraordinary person, Aaron Stevens, interviewed by Kathy Welter Nichols.
So it's just great to be here with you, Aaron, and really want to let the listeners know a little bit more about you and how Harry and I have had the experience of just getting to know you through your book, through your writings, through your teachings, and what a wonderful spiritual life you've really led, kind of blessed in many ways. I think it would feel that way. But I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what was your call to that spirituality? How did that happen?
I was blessed to have been born on a farm on Vancouver Island in the midst of beauty, and my parents instilled in me a love of nature. We weren't particularly religious as a family, but there was a strong undercurrent of spirituality and also a kind of communing with God through the creation, through nature and beauty. So that was kind of a background for me. But when I was 13, the farm was sold and we all moved to Hollywood, California, where my dad, at the age of 60, pursued an alternate career in music. And so we had a lot of, you know, whom later became well-known singers and musicians jamming at our house until late at night. But into this whole milieu, I went through a very dark period and struggled a great deal, and even thought of committing suicide when I was about 16. I came out of that dark hole, and I went to a monastery when I was 17 called the Fountain of the World. It was kind of an offbeat monastery up in the mountains of Chatsworth in outside of Los Angeles. And one day when I was there at this monastery, I was just standing with my eyes closed and looking into the void, kind of praying to the divine spirit, whatever it was, to help me and heal me. And as I was looking into the dark void, I saw in the distance a comet-like light speeding towards me. And then it came and it not only like exploded in front of my inner vision, but it just kind of passed over me and through me. And then another one came. It was they were coming, these kind of like bursts of light that were coming rhythmically, almost like the heartbeat of God. And in that state of timelessness, I felt completely accepted and completely loved. And I was absolutely unaware of my body or anything of this world at that time. And that started me. That experience started me on my search, my quest for truth. And something that's so insubstantial as a light that appeared within. When I went to others to try to get an understanding of it, an explanation of it, I really believe they thought I was crazy, right? Except the head of the monastery, I went, her name was Elder Nakona, and I asked her about this strange light that I had experienced, and she said, "I don't know what this light is, my son, but I can tell you that you have been blessed."
Wow.
So here I was, a 17-year-old kid, you know, struggling to find my way out of addictions and all kinds of things. So that radically changed the whole course of my life. So I began to search. I tried various paths. I tried various techniques. I studied with Sufis. I studied with the Gurdjieffians, with Uspensky. I went to the Ramakrishna Mission in New York City. It's not affiliated with the Hare Krishnas, but the Ramakrishna Mission was actually started by a disciple of Swami Ramakrishna, who was a God-realized master.
Wow.
And through him, and through Ramakrishna's teachings, I realized that this world has had many great illumined teachers. When I was in California, I also was fortunate to be led to the Self-Realization Fellowship, Lake Shrine in the Malibu Hills, and it was established by Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of the Yogi.
Yes, yes.
And I was tremendously uplifted, but I felt the need for a living teacher. Yogananda had passed away, Ramakrishna had passed away, Gurdjieff was no more, Uspensky had gone, and it seemed like all the teachers that I had come across, even Aurobindo, who talked about the supermind and the superconsciousness, the experience of divine light that is transformative, he also was gone. And so I at that time, I was 20 years old, and I was determined to somehow get to the Far East. I felt that I might be able to find a great teacher, a living teacher, perhaps somewhere in, maybe in India, maybe in Tibet, perhaps in the Middle East somewhere. I didn't think that the way life was structured in the West that I would be able to find that. And the thing is, there's an old saying, when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. And it was at that juncture in New York City in 1964 that, by an unusual set of circumstances, I was led to the awareness of Sant Kirpal Singh. And I was not told who he was. I just saw a photograph of him in a friend of mine's studio. And when I looked at the picture of him, I had, again, another out-of-body experience where my soul rose up out of my body and the whole place was filled with light. And I again heard a voice, and it said, "If God has a face, he must look like this." And I was totally, you know, gobsmacked, flabbergasted by this, because I had no point of reference. I had no point of reference whatsoever. And I asked the fellow that had the picture of him to tell me about him, and he wouldn't tell me anything about him. But he did, at the end of our meeting, he did give me an old tattered book called The Great Saint Baba Jamal Singh. And I read that book through the night, and I said, "Wow, these teachings are really real. I think I found my path. I believe I found my master." So I began a correspondence with Sant Kirpal Singh, who was a great saint who lived from 1894 to 1974. And I had the good fortune of going to India when I was 23 years old.
Oh my.
And I spent 7 months with him. And he told me, when I arrived there, "Don't think of the future and don't think of the past. You are a dear child of the Father, and you're to stay here with me." And I went there without any money, without any resources. I had no education. I had no qualifications of any sort. However, he was so kind to me and so loving He must have seen something there. And he allowed me to accompany him throughout India. So we went to many big cities and little villages, and wherever he went, he was recognized and greeted by tens of thousands of people. He was like a spiritual superstar in India. And yet he'd written 20 books in English, and he was well known in the West as well. So that began my kind of my spiritual journey. And I wrote about it in my book, A Journey to the Luminous. Mm-hmm. It was written after about 40 years of time that was spent in the company of this great luminary and other great spiritual teachers.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
How did you, or how, for us who live in the West, how do we stay out of the past and out of the future? How do we stay in that moment of now?
To enter the divine presence, we have to basically cut off the past and cut off the future, either the memories of the past or the fear of the future, the fear of the unknown.
Right.
We have to enter into a state of trust and receptivity. Receptivity.
Okay.
I think Yogananda once said it very beautifully. He said, "The winds of grace are always blowing." Mm-hmm. But you have to unfurl your sails
to
catch the wind and have your boat be moved across the water. However, you need a good guide. You need a good pilot, you know, and you need a rudder, and you need a keel. You need good sails, and you need a ship that is not going to sink.
So is this like? Did he show you somehow how to get into that?
Yes,
state
I mean we all possess it. We're all micro gods, each one of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We all carry within us a spark of the divine. They say that God is an ocean of all consciousness, of all intoxication, of all love, all beauty, all light, and we are drops of that same ocean. But our drop has become environed by mind and matter. It has become sullied. It has become impure.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to become purified. It has to become cleansed. And that's why, you know, Jesus would say, you must become as a little child to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to lose our cleverness. We have to lose our learning. We have to lose everything if we're to gain everything.
Wow. That's beautiful. I know I've heard that in so many different teachings that I've studied too, but it's so beautifully put.
Somebody once came to a fakir. He was a God realized saint in the Muslim or Sufi tradition, and he had nothing of any material value, and yet he and another highly evolved soul were bowing to each other, calling each other, "O Maharaj, O King, O Padsha." One of them said to somebody who came to him asking for the alms of spiritual grace, and he said, the saint said to him, "Give us everything you have, and we will give you all that we possess."
What a deal.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. So you were saying earlier, too, that you meditate every day. What is your daily practice now?
Well, I follow a very ancient, not very well known path of spiritual practice. It's called the Surat Shabd Yoga. It's also called Sant Mat, or the Path of the Masters.
Okay.
Surat Shabd Yoga actually explains a lot in itself. Surat means the individual attention, the individual soul. Shabad is the divine sound current, the sound that created all of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And yoga, the true meaning of yoga means to unite. So it's the uniting of the individual attention with the supernal sound essence of God.
And you do this every day?
I do this every day. It's a practice of inner light and inner sound current.
okay, I need to know what this is. This is beautiful.
The inner light is something that it can spontaneously manifest in people when they're ready. But it can also happen when one is initiated by a true saint or a true guru. There are many, the word guru has fallen into disrepute because
Agreed.
So many people have been actors and posers and have built people and looted them, I would say, not only monetarily, but also spiritually and morally. So many of those who are claim to be gurus are actually morally, physically, and spiritually bankrupt. And and therefore, you know, the whole teachings and of the master-disciple relationship becomes tarnished.
Mm-hmm.
But there are true saints out there. There are true gurus. They're very rare. But this world has never been without them.
Mm-hmm. Are you in that?
No, I'm just fortunate to be like a collared dog. Someone who has been, who luckily strayed into the presence of a great saint and a great master.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a few things and gleaned a few crumbs from at their table.
Mm-hmm. So do you meditate on the light?
Yes, I meditate on the light and the sound every morning, every day.
Is it the light that you saw that day?
Yes, the same light.
Okay.
It's the same light. It's the light of God that's mm-hmm. within each one of us. It's just dormant. It just needs to be given a contact.
Mm.
And that's what happens when one comes to a true saint or master. He will give the experience of opening the inner vision to see the inner light mm-hmm. and opening the inner ear to hear the divine sound current at the time of initiation. But he charges no money for this. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a gift.
Beautiful. Thank you.
You're listening to Mastery of Deep Trance States, interviews with extraordinary people, with Kathy Welter Nichols, here on the Lion Radio.
So I just want to double back on this just for a minute. You spoke of this divine light and listening to this sound, and where can people learn how to do this?
Fortunately, there are many centers throughout the world that are affiliated with the living master of this science, Sant Brijinder Singh Ji. And the science is called the Science of Spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find information about it through sos.org, www.sos.org. SOS stands for Science of Spirituality. It could also stand for Save Our Souls.
That's a great acronym. Everybody knows it.
And our center that we have here in Richmond is the first center to actually incorporate ecology along with spirituality and meditation.
What exactly is that, the ecology part?
Well, ecology is derived from the Greek oikos, which means home. Ecology means the study of our home. This earth is our home while we're here.
Mm-hmm.
But we have another home where our soul descended and separated from many eons and eons ago. Through the process of meditation and spiritual living, one can retrace one's steps back to the source. Maulana Rumi, who was a great Sufi mystic, lived in Persia, modern-day Turkey. He said, I want a heart torn by separation, that I may unfold to such a one the pain of love. For everyone who is left far from his source wishes back the time when he were one with it. So in every mystical and spiritual tradition, there's this talk of separation, how our soul somehow became separated from God. And because it's separated, it's like a fish out of water. It is yearning and restless and finds no peace. And there's no lasting happiness or fulfillment in the things of this world.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are spiritual beings having a human experience. We are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Our soul is eternal. It was in the beginning. It will exist forever. But it's going through the gyres. It's going through this what's called the wheel of transmigration. It's going through the wheel of life and death. Mm-hmm. And in that process, it has forgotten its divine origin. Mm-hmm. So Rumi, when he was talking about wanting a heart that's torn by separation, he's expressing this innate desire within every one of us for a return to that state that we once enjoyed, which was in the lap of eternity.
Mm. And that's where we're all going back to.
But along
no
the way...
No matter our beliefs,
no matter our color, no matter our religion.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. The truth is one. It is expressed variously.
Beautiful.
You're listening to Mastery of Deep Trance States, interviews with extraordinary people, with Kathy Welter Nichols, here on Align Radio.
So we're here in this beautiful center here this morning, and I just wanted you to talk a little bit more about it. It's at Shell Road and Steveston Highway in Richmond, British Columbia.
Yes.
In Canada, not far from Vancouver, and not far from the airport either. But go ahead and share a little bit about maybe how this came to be. When did you start this?
Well, we've been having meetings here in Vancouver since I came here in 1965, and we're meeting in places like the YMCA or the YWCA or Rented Church. And we never had our own place. Sometimes it was in a community center. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to put up with, you know, people's cigarette butts and, you know, the kind of worldly vibrations of places. And we thought, we always wanted to have our own place. So it was about 7 years ago that somebody told me that, hey, there's a school, this old school that's for sale in Richmond. And it's a good location and, you know, we should take a look at it. So I went and looked at it. It belonged to the school board, and it was for sale. And we negotiated a very good price for this. It was, I think, about $800,000 for this place. It's a 6,000 square foot school on about 1.5 acres.
Oh, wow!
Surrounded by farmland on two sides. Mm-hmm. Just centrally located in the middle of the Greater Vancouver area, and so we put our heads together and our hearts, and a number of people donated money, and we came up and purchased this place. But when we bought it, it was in a derelict condition. Mm-hmm. Everything here was kind of rotting. The windows were broken, broken glass all over the place. It was a hodgepodge of little classrooms, and there was no garden here at all.
Oh,
it was just a field of weeds and lots of feral rabbits. So with a small team of volunteers, we brought in 30 truckloads of soil and built a berm out here and planted a garden. We've got over 30 fruit trees, a very productive garden that provides food for our Sunday meals. We have free meals here every Sunday. We have anywhere from 75 to 100 people come every Sunday.
Wow.
And we take the food from the garden, transform it into wonderful lunches, and I'd say the garden supplies about 80% of the food here 6 or 7 months out of the year. And it's all organic.
Wow.
And we have mostly young adults, some older ones too, that prepare the food every Sunday here for 75 to 100 people.
Wow. So you must have had to do something with those rabbits.
We wished them well. And we built a rabbit-proof fence.
Ah, yes, because there's lots of other gardens that you can go to.
Yes.
Right here. Perfect.
Because the rabbits, they really did a lot of havoc in the garden.
Oh, they would.
Yeah, they do.
They just munch away at everything.
We had to dig down chicken wire down 2 feet into the ground and have it turned at a 90-degree angle at the bottom so that when they dig down, they couldn't get through the wire.
Wow.
Private and confidential. Do you have a problem that you need to address? Call Kathy or Harry on 1-604-421-1722 or visit our website www.masteryofdeeptrancestates.com.
Okay, so this beautiful garden here that provides all this natural food that's grown holistically right here, and everyone eats it every week. Can you share a little bit about what food meant in your journey?
Food was a very important but integral part of my spiritual journey. In about 1964, I had come to the realization that if I wanted to realize God, it was very important that I take care of the temple that God gave me, which is this human body. And you are what you eat. I did not want to make a burial ground out of my body. Mm-hmm. So I decided to stop eating meat when I was 20. And I have never eaten meat since then. And since that time, I've raised a family of four strong, healthy children, all vegetarian, and now we have grandchildren. And my wife was a lifelong vegetarian, is still a lifelong vegetarian. And her grandmother, who lived to be about 90, was also a strict vegetarian. And her mother is now in her 80s, and she's still going strong. Mm-hmm. So we've seen so many people. Came across a yogi in India who was 116 when he passed away, all his life vegetarian. So I'd say the requirement for meat is grossly exaggerated in the West. We can live without animal foods very healthily, abundantly, and enjoy more life in our life, mm-hmm. and we can be more at peace with ourselves and with our surroundings. If you seriously want to realize God, you really want to unfold your higher potential, the desire for eating meat naturally falls away. Mm-hmm. And you find in almost every spiritual tradition, many Sufi traditions, Hindu, Christian, and even Jewish organizations have devoted themselves to a practice of not eating animals.
Mm-hmm. Does this include dairy as well? And milk?
In some cases, in India, dairy is quite commonly used. Mm-hmm. In some other traditions, not so much. Mm-hmm. In China, hardly at all, I would say. Mm-hmm. China and Japan, hardly any dairy is consumed. It's not really necessary, but it has been allowed in spiritual practices to consume small quantities of dairy products. Because they're considered to be sattvic. Mm-hmm. So long as the animal is not killed for its milk.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So this really leads us beautifully into your wonderful new book, The Compassionate Diet. I wonder if you'd like to maybe speak a little bit about that.
Well, in my first book, Journey to the Luminous, I explored many dimensions of the spiritual journey and my own experiences traveling throughout India, studying with great teachers. But I did not expound much on the need for diet. So I felt that a book on specifically dealing with the diet and the compassion needed to be written. So for several years I worked on this book called The Compassionate Diet. And it is it has a subtitle, How What You Eat Can Change Your Life and Save the Planet. So this covers various aspects of the vegetarian diet, whether it's for health or for scientific reasons or ecological reasons, ethical reasons, or religious and moral reasons. And I've gone back into some of the ancient origins of religions, of Christianity, of Hinduism, of Sikhism, and many other spiritual traditions, and have gleaned from these traditions the very strong support that was at the beginnings of these religions for a vegetarian diet. Mm-hmm. And so I've included quotations from there.
Oh,
and
brilliant.
So I think for whatever reason that may be out there for that would support a plant-based diet, it's in this book.
Excellent.
The Compassionate Diet.
And for people who are looking for it here in Canada, we can certainly find it in Vanyan Books. And I'll put a little bit more information on the end of that, where they can find it.
And you can buy it through Amazon.
Awesome.
Yes.
Great.
Face to face. Over the phone. on the internet with Skype. We can help you get what you want. Call 604-421-1722 or www.masteryofdeeptrancestates.com or Skype us on Thought Models.
So this really brings us now to the work you do in the world, which is where you've taken your business into such an incredible pathway that really is in alignment with your spiritual values. Mm-hmm. So I'd really love for you to share how that came about.
When I was in India in 1967, toward the end of my stay there, I went to my teacher and I told him that I was concerned about how I was going to earn my living when I got back to the West. And I mentioned to him that I would like to start a vegetarian restaurant to teach people how nutritious and economical and healthful a vegetarian diet can be and how tasty it can be. So he said, it's a good idea. And so when I got back to Vancouver, I only had $7. And I borrowed $1,500 from two friends. And with that money, I started a small vegetarian restaurant in Vancouver. And it became very, very popular. It was the first one of its kind ever here in Canada. And it just started growing like Topsy. And from there came, out of the back of that, came Banyan Books, which is Colin at Banyan Books.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
He started Banyan's off of sort of...
That's right. It was a separate business. Oh, but wow. He was one of the people that was with me in the beginning. And from that little Golden Lotus restaurant on the corner of 4th and Bayswater, then came Lifestream Natural Foods on the corner of West 4th Avenue and Burrard Street. And that became like an institution. We had wall-to-wall customers there. And it was during the hippie era, 1971, 72, 73, 74. And every year there, our business doubled. Some people call me a hippie capitalist. And I never was a hippie. Although I didn't cut my hair. I was, I shared a lot of the values, the love for peace, but I wasn't into drugs. I wasn't into dissolute living and what have you. So for me, I had the blessings of my teacher to go ahead to be fair yet firm and have an environment that was conducive to the values that I believed in, such as a vegetarian diet, nonviolence, love for all, serving both humanity as well as serving the land. I made the connection early on, the importance of food and the quality of food has on our well-being. And I became very much involved in the organic food movement and growing food and preparing it properly and serving it. Our business over the years expanded, became Nature's Path Foods, which is today North America's largest organic breakfast cereal, breakfast foods company.
Fantastic.
Everything's organic, everything's is vegetarian, and we employ hundreds of people in several communities. But it is something that's completely separate from Science of Spirituality, which is not tainted by any kind of commercial enterprise. Mm-hmm. But we have to earn a living somehow, mm-hmm. and we have to support our families. And I felt that why not do something that you love doing that supports you and your family and also supports other people and is in the same time is doing some good in the community. I didn't want to do anything that was toxic or harmful. I didn't want to earn my living by anything that's going to hurt anybody or any animal. And so, with, I'd say, lots of hard work and blessings of the Almighty, our business has succeeded and flourished over the decades.
That's fantastic. I wonder if I could lead into this one here too, because there's this connection that kind of fits into your timeline here somewhere of where you met your beautiful wife. How did that happen?
Well, after I came back from India in 1967, after being there with Sant Kripal Singh for 7 months, I started this restaurant, and when it seemed like it was standing on its own legs, I was dying to get back to India. So I went back to India, and in I guess it was about 10 months after I had left there. So I was back in India in 1968 when I left it in 1967. And I guess it was about 4 months into my visit, one day a gentleman whom I knew came up to me and he said, "Aranji, would you like to marry an Indian girl?" And I said, "Oh, well, I don't know. It's whatever his will is." "Oh, yes, she's very good. She's very qualified. She's MA. She teaches college." And I said, "Oh, good. Well, the qualification I want is that somebody who is on the path and is, it will be very good for me, you know, spiritually, will be good for each other." He says, "Oh, yes, she's very qualified. She's MA. She's MA." He kept on emphasizing the degree. And anyway, that evening I was introduced to lovely Ratna and her family. And we were not allowed to date. She went back to her city, which was about 100 miles away from the ashram. And we both, just from that brief connection, we both felt that we were destined for each other. Hmm. And without a lot of further ado, about a month or so later, we were married at the ashram in the meditation hall.
Oh, my.
That was on March 4th, 1969. And she's been a wonderful, wonderful companion. But this kind of relationship, which is not based on starting off, you know, living together, it was a very pure, and it seemed very natural and very enduring. And we've been very fortunate together to build this business and to have four wonderful children. We have four beautiful grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Three of the kids are actually involved in the business. And so we see a succession plan here.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a great story. I've seen the pictures of the wedding. And
you saw two of our daughters and and our son last night.
And heard their beautiful voices. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And the grandchildren have the voices. They're singing, too.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing.
Music is a big part of our family.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
You're listening to Mastery of Deep Trance States. Interviews with Extraordinary People with Kathy Welter Nichols here on Alliance Radio.
So I have two daughters that are in their 30s now, and we have three granddaughters too. But when I was growing up with the children, the food source was different. We were eating a little more close to where we lived, that kind of thing, and it was kind of a new age thing, I guess, to make your own baby food, but I did that.
Sure.
I didn't vaccinate them because I didn't, it wasn't pressure like it is today. But there was a lot of pressure on mothers at that time to leave breastfeeding and go to formula. Mm-hmm. A lot of pressure. They gave it to us right in the hospital. Mm-hmm. They gave us the injections right away that stopped your milk. And they never asked you. They just did it. Sure. And it was pretty shocking to me as I come through it now, and I'm at this place today where I realize how important that was. So a lot of my moms and dads that are having babies today are still getting a lot of pressure on what to feed their children, to give them dairy, to supplement with formula, and then of course to get them right eating red meat and meat products right away as a source of protein. What kind of thing could you maybe help them to be encouraged to go in this direction?
Well, there are a lot of excellent books out there by nutritionists and doctors that support a vegetarian approach. The need for protein has been grossly exaggerated, and it's a lot of the parameters that have been set for our food guidelines have basically been influenced heavily by the meat and dairy industries. So, our children were brought up without any meat whatsoever, and they didn't have vaccinations either, and they've been extremely healthy. They haven't had any major health problems, even though the society had put pressure on them to eat meat and to go to McDonald's and things like that. We tried to our little subversive ways in order to help them. For example, we give them sandwiches, and one time they had to go to McDonald's and have hamburgers, so we gave our kids veggie burgers so that they could still not be totally, you know, looked upon as being completely weird.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have their burger, which would be actually a vegetarian burger, but the other kids didn't necessarily, you know, point out. But I think the kids did have to face some flack, some criticism from their students and teachers, but they stood up to it.
How did you manage as parents?
And I think it made them stronger.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had our principles. We would not deviate from our principles. Mm-hmm. That's just the way we are.
Because certainly, this is what my parents tell me.
Yeah.
They go into the clinics with their kids to have them check for colds and stuff, and they're right away, what are your vaccination schedules, and what are you feeding these kids?
I think it's really important that children, you know, be fed mother's milk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, because the doctors are in a hurry, they usually do cesarean operations on, you know, so they can get the childbirth over with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that should only be done as a last resort.
In our province, it's 52%.
50, yeah. And really, probably there are only maybe 5 or 10% of the mothers that really need it.
Yeah.
Right.
We do live in a time when we have that science available to us. But now it is kind of becoming a convenience thing, and it does take a lot of pressure off the mothers.
And I was just hearing a program on gender selection. There's something like 192 million female babies have been aborted because of gender selection.
Whoa.
A bias towards having boys,
here?
Which is terrible.
In this country?
No, not a
in
little
China.
Bit here, but more in China and India and Azerbaijan and other countries. Which is a tragic thing. It's creating an imbalance in the population, and this is going to cause a lot of social problems.
Yes, they'll have one female left.
Well, anyway, we had three daughters and a son, so
yeah. So you can help out.
We tried to help out.
Thank you very much for that. And I guess maybe that's the advice to parents: is they have to figure it out and make those commitments to themselves.
Yeah.
To find those alternate types of foods that will give the proteins.
Yes, and as I said before. The need and the quantity of protein that is stated that you need is grossly exaggerated because those parameters have been set by the meat lobbies and the and the dairy lobbies.
And there's some really good material out there on that right now.
Yes.
If parents want to dig for it, for sure.
Well, I've dealt with it in my book also on Compassionate Diet.
Awesome. Yeah. So there's information there.
Yes.
Brilliant. And so there's just so much good information here. I could spend hours in each segment of it, but I know we can't do that. But I'd just like to turn this back to you now, Aaron, and if there's any one area you might like to just conclude with.
Well, what is the purpose of our life? Why are we here? Are we here just for a few moments in eternity, just to live and procreate and pass away, you know, just, again, one of the billions that's forgotten?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we here for a higher purpose? I believe we've all been sent here for a higher purpose, to evolve spiritually. And this is why spirituality has been the underpinning of my life and has informed the decisions that I've made in all aspects of my life, whether it's business or family or society. We believe in giving back to society, in serving the society, and our company has been quite generous in its giving back programs to food banks and other areas. So we feel that's important. But above and beyond all that is the soul's hunger for union, the soul's desire to unfold its latent spirituality so that we can take steps to return back to the source from where we came. So we can become, while we're here in this world, more loving citizens, more universal citizens that don't see boundaries, you know, of country or color or race or religion, that we see all as brothers and sisters in one great spiritual community, regardless of our external differences or the differences of culture. These differences tend to divide us, But if we can find our commonality, our common thread, our common humanity, our common light, then we will come closer to creating peace and tolerance and acceptance in this world. Mm-hmm. They say that animals live for themselves, but a true human being is one who lives for others. And I think the natural outcome of spiritual development is more compassion, more love, and more kindness in this world. Mm-hmm. So I think that so long as we are alive, we need to focus on developing spiritually, engaging in a spiritual practice that helps us evolve from a state of sleep to a state of wakefulness, from a state of disunity to a state of unity, and to engage in our worldly work and activity in a way that does not harm other people, that we spread in this life the fragrance of whatever attainment we make on the spiritual journey, that we do our best to improve this world that we all came in to. My father was a farmer, and when I would help him in the fields as a young boy, he used to tell me, he says, "Araboy, always leave the soil better than you found it." Mm-hmm. And I think that's a metaphor for us having this obligation or responsibility to leave this world better than we found it. Because there are millions of people who would definitely want to leave it worse than they found it. But I think we have a responsibility to make it a better place. And perhaps we will become the compost for the future generations. And may, from the compost of our lives, may the flowers of peace and beauty grow and spread their fragrance in the world.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for taking this time with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for allowing me to share a few crumbs.
Beautiful. Thank you.
It was a lovely Sunday morning, and Harry and I traveled from Burnaby out to Richmond to the Steveston Highway and the location of the Science of Spirituality in Richmond. And this is located at 11011 Shell Road at Steveston Highway. So we arrived there in this beautiful morning in midwinter, and it was just before Christmas. And we went in to set up with Aaron to do this wonderful interview with him. And the energy in this particular building is so beautiful. They've taken over the gardens and they plant all the different foods there, many of which are used every Sunday morning to feed all those that are attending their services at this particular location. So the Science of Spirituality Eco Center fulfills a vision established by Sant Kirpal Singh Gilmara for a major urban spiritual center in the Pacific Northwest that includes meditation and service to humanity, nature, and ecology. And this eco-center is beautifully situated and easy to access. They offer many, many meditation classes, and everyone is welcome to come. The beautiful thing that happened during this wonderful interview, and I'm sure you've enjoyed listening to it too, and I really wanted to share that with you, was that during it, the energy was so lovely in this very beautiful oasis in the middle of Richmond, really. And the energy that Aaron brought to this was just so wonderful. We had an opportunity to spend some time with he and his family on a Christmas celebration and listen to them all singing and really enjoying that time together too. So the messages from Aaron on this particular morning were really heartfelt and was a wonderful deep sharing from this very spiritual man. Both Harry and I really enjoyed being in his presence and being in the presence of this beautiful sanctuary. There's a lovely poem that he's placed on the bottom of the website for Science of Spirituality in Richmond, and it goes like this. Kind hearts are the gardens. Kind thoughts are the roots. Kind words are the flowers. Take care of your garden and keep out the weeds. Fill it with sunshine, kind words, and kind deeds. And this is a lovely poem from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And it absolutely represents all the work of Aaron and his company and his family. And I'm just so pleased and thankful that Harry and I had the opportunity to do this and share this with you. His wisdom, his insights, and his knowledge are absolutely profound. He leaves a legacy for all of us. Thank you, Aaron.
Since 1970, Banyan Books and Sound has grown to become an abundant oasis, one of the most comprehensive selections in North America, focusing on spiritual traditions, healing arts, and earth wisdom. Our store offers over 26,000 titles, books, music, DVDs, audio teachings, and oracles. We also have a wide spectrum of gifts, meditation, and yoga supplies, musical instruments, crystals, statues, incenses, and smudges, and much, much more. You can check out a Banyan event, exciting and thought-provoking talks, book signings, workshops, presentations, storytelling, meditations, gatherings. Banyan Books and Sound, 3608 West 4th Avenue, Vancouver, British Columbia, V6R1P1. We're open Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., and Sundays, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. You can call us on 1-604-732-7912. That's 1-604-732-7912. Find us on the web, www.banyan.com. And on Facebook, Banyan Books and Sound. . 2012 is the most exciting year there has ever been. And we at the Mastery of Deep Trance States have an amazing lineup of trainings and workshops for you. Mastery of Deep Trance States Gateway Workshop Series, 7 of 9. Equilibrium Source Matrix, Thursday, March the 8th to Sunday, March the 11th. Canadian Memorial United Church and Center for Peace, 1825 West 16th Avenue, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Beyond Boundaries, Bridging Potential, 8 of 9, Tuesday, June the 19th to Friday, June the 22nd, incorporating the summer solstice, Mount Shasta, California, U.S. 9 of 9, Undivided, Mastery of Self, Wednesday, December the 19th to Saturday, December the 22nd, incorporating the winter equinox. Isle of Avalon Foundation, 2 to 4 High Street, Glastonbury, Somerset, United Kingdom. Mastery of Deep Trance States presents Changing Core Belief, One Day Interactive Workshop, Saturday, February 25th, Simon Fraser University Harbour Centre, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Thought Models Interactive One-Day Workshop, Communication Excellence. January 29th, The Map is Not the Territory, Planning for Success. February the 26th, Access Resourceful States, Building Confidence. March the 25th, Dynamic Patterns of Influence, Rapport Skills. May the 20th, The Language of Persuasion, Ethical Influence. August the 26th, Introduction to Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Thought Models, NLP Practitioner Certification Training. intensive 9 days, Friday, May the 5th to Saturday, May the 11th. Weekends, 9 days over September, October, November. Experience deeper levels of spiritual work. The Shaman Inside Program. Return of the Light, Under the Mountain, Shamanic Journey. 2-day workshop, Mount Shasta, California, USA. Saturday, June the 16th to Sunday, June the 17th. Shaman Inside, Return of the Golden Light, Shamanic Journey. 2-day workshop, Saturday, December the 15th to Sunday, December the 16th. Isle of Avalon Foundation Limited, 2 to 4 High Street, Glastonbury, Somerset, United Kingdom. For more information on all of these trainings and workshops, call us 1-604-421-1722. More details are available at www.masteryofdeeptrancestates.com, www.thoughtmodels.com.
I just came across this note from Aaron after our interview time with him, and Harry and I had sent him a note of thanks and gratitude for his grace and gracefulness in inviting us to all these different events with him and his family. And I came across this note and I thought, you know, I'm going to put this on the end of the interview because it really speaks to the nature of this extraordinary man. Dear Kathy, it was our pleasure. I enjoyed our interview and trust that you were touched by the master power overhead. Call it grace, call it love, or call it light. To enfold the inner light lying dormant within us, as well as to have a conscious connection to the divine sound current, whether it be the word, the kalma, music of the spheres, etc., it is necessary to come to a master of this science. I believe Harry bought a copy of Master Rajinder's latest book, Spark of the Divine. In there is a very clear roadmap of spirituality and the how-to. It's a beautiful book with many valuable lessons. You are both welcome to come back to the programs at the Science of Spirituality Meditation and Ecology Center at any time. And I'm going to extend his invitation to any of you as well. It's well worth your time. He goes on to say, thank you very much for the opportunity to share a few crumbs that I was fortunate to gather. Loving regards, Aaron. I hope you've enjoyed this interview as much as we enjoyed gathering it, preparing it, and meeting the man that you've just listened to. Thanks so much.